Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
The face on your driver's license, he's different. Has a different name.
Wow.
When I get back, I'd like to get to know that guy.
Don't do this, silly.
You wrote a 5-minute song about this girl in Minneapolis. Who was that? What happened? You tell me you dropped out of college.
No, I didn't drop out of college.
You came here with nothing but a guitar. You never talk about your family, your past, besides the carnival.
People make up their past, silly. They remember what they want. They forget the rest.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster, and on behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to this episode of Bob Dylan Hall of Fame Albums. And I am joined today by someone who's making an induction, and that person is a voice that will be familiar to you regular listeners. It's Harris King from South Carolina. Harris, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Great to be here.
Thank you very much for coming on and taking the time. I appreciate it. You are always there when we need listener contributions, and that's greatly appreciated by Jim and myself, and I do believe the rest of the listening community as well. So without further ado, we've got three albums already inducted into the Bob Dylan Hall of Fame, so you've still got a pretty broad variety to choose from. What album are you going for?
I am choosing Street Legal from 1978.
Nice. And what was the driving force behind your choice of this album?
Well, the main reason I love Street Legal is because of one song. I love the whole album, but Senor, Tales of Yankee Power just grabbed me when I originally heard it way back when. And I can tell you a little bit of background on that. So I became a Dylan fan probably in the mid 80s, and you know, I loved all the old stuff, clearly the 60s stuff that was played potentially on classic rock radio, but I really don't know why, but I just became a huge Dylan fan and still am. I have all of his albums and I've always followed it. The first album I bought in real time was 1985's Knocked Out Loaded, which is clearly uneven, but it has, you know, Brownsville Girl on it, which is and so Brownsville Girl is a classic, a Dylan, you know, a top 50, top 100 song for sure. And Senor, Tales of Yankee Power is just a song that grabbed me. And so, what I was just saying, so I started buying other albums. I got the 60s. I got the core ones from the first one through the 60s. And then I started buying other ones. So I assume I just saw Street Legal in a record store and I just bought it because I love Dylan. And I remember playing that. At the time I had an Onkyo setup in my bedroom and I put it on my Onkyo turntable and that song is side two, and I didn't know what to make of it. I'd heard a ton of Dylan already, but it was different. You know, it's sort of this minor key. It's a ballad. I didn't know a ton about it at the time, but I've since become a big fan of literature and music about the U.S.-Mexico border, whether it's Cormac McCarthy or, you know, or other things like that. And that has that in it, even though it's not direct and it's not based, you know, it's very, you know, it's hard to know exactly what he's singing about. It's Bob Dylan. So that's what grabbed me. I'm really inducting Senor, Tales of Yankee Power, leading the way of Street Legal into the Bob Dylan Hall of Fame.
Senor, can you tell me where we head? Lincoln County Road or Armageddon. Seem like I've been down this way before. Is there any truth in that, senor? Senor. Senor. Do you know where she's hiding? How long are we gonna be riding? How long must I keep my eyes glued to the door? Will there be any comfort there, senor? There's a wicked wind still blowing on that upper deck. There's an iron cross still hanging down from around our neck. There's a marching band still playing in that vacant lot. Well, she held me in her arms one time and said, forget me not, senor. Senor.
Good of a reason as any, that's for darn sure, especially in Dylan's catalog. Now, this album is interesting to me because it's the one, the studio album that came after Desire a couple of years before, and the last one before his controversial set of Christian albums that begins with Slow Train Coming. So, do you... I mean, but sitting between those two extremes, do you feel like this album tilts one way or the other, or closer to Desire? Or...
I mean, I think, you know, you look at the songs and the song titles. I mean, the first album, the first song on the album is called Changing of the Guards.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's both musical, perhaps, but also personal, because at the time he was going... I mean, we know about Blood on the Tracks. It's a breakup record for sure.
Right.
But he was still dealing with a divorce and custody battles when he was writing the songs and making Street Legal. Mm-hmm. And it starts off, the first words of that song, Changing of the Guard, are 16 years. And that's 1962 to 1978, perhaps. His first album was 62. This one's 78. Ah. So Changing of the Guards of his life. But also a little, you know, looking towards the Christian albums that were coming the next, starting in 1979. So I think it definitely can be placed within his canon to make sense in a narrative fashion.
Right. Okay. That's very interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way, and that makes a lot of sense. And now that you point that out, that is very interesting that that is the first track. And I'm very interested in the last track as well, Where Are You Tonight? And then in parentheticals, Journey Through Dark Heat. That's kind of a soul-searching song. And one thing, when I was doing a little bit of reading before our recording session today, I noticed that during the recording of this album was the time when Elvis died. And that apparently had a very big effect on Dylan. You know, it shook him to the core.
Sure, yeah. And that song's great. That I would put that right up there with Senor, Tales of Yankee Power on this album as well. And it has the line in it, I fought with my twin, the enemy within.
So yeah.
He's dealing with himself and trying, so also Changing of the Guard, or, you know, it's a similar theme there as well. You know, and I'll go ahead and say I love Dylan. I love his words. I actually know all his words when I hear the songs, which is not common with me. I tend to mess up lyrics, even in songs I've heard 1,000 times. But for some reason, Dylan just sticks with me. So I don't want to read too much into it. I just love the poetry and the surrealism and all of that in his lyrics. But, you know, I fought with my twin, the enemy within, is pretty straightforward as well.
It is. So. Yeah.
I fought with my twin, that enemy within. Tailbone.
And you know, it's such a great point about his lyrics and meaning and all that, when in the end, he often turns out such a great song and it all works together. And I know it's just been a tendency of a lot of people to be, you know, analysts of Dylan's lyrics, you know, down to the letter and everything. But sometimes, you know, kind of letting art flow over you in that sense is interesting too.
That's what I do. You know, I do. I have it right here in front of me. On my 17th birthday, a friend gave me Bob Dylan lyrics, 1962 to 85, and I still have it. So that shows you how much of a Dylan fan I already was as a 17-year-old. Like,
yeah,
that's been part of my brand for my whole life, that I get made fun of, clearly, by my friends. But that's fine. I can deal with that. I can deal with that. So I was reading through the lyrics as well, which I haven't done a long, long time, just to read the lyrics as poetry versus hearing it in the song. And I'm like, yeah, this is super interesting. So,
so musically, I find this album to be pretty interesting. I hadn't listened to it in quite a while, and I played it yesterday, and it is kind of a, I guess, you know, during this time, in general, Dylan had done the Rolling Thunder tour, right, which had a lot of expansive stuff with, you know, with violins and things like that. And there's some of that on this record, right? But it's tempered down a little bit. It's not as, like, free-flowing as Desire.
I think he had a couple of Rolling Thunder band members,
yeah,
that were still with Street Legal, but he had new people. It sort of, just reading through it, seemed like a hodgepodge of musicians and the three backup singers. You know,
right,
it's got a different sound, which normally I'm not a huge backup singer type music person. And I'm also not a huge brass instrument or saxophone mm-hmm. person. But this album has both throughout, and I love it. You know, I was looking it up. I'm like, oh, who are these people? And the sax player is Steve Douglas, and he was in the Wrecking Crew. So, I mean,
was he? Wow.
Yeah. He was in the Wrecking Crew, or, you know, the drummer, Ian Wallace of King Crimson. So, it's Bob Dylan, so he can get people, clearly. But,
right.
I really think the sax and the backup singers, the three women, Carolyn Dennis, Joanne Harris, and Helena Springs. You know, it's Dylan. So he just sort of gives an idea and the musicians have to react to it. And it's pretty great what came of it.
Yeah, you know, and I was listening, as I said, to this record yesterday and just thinking to myself, why haven't I listened to this album more? Because it's kind of as I said, one that kind of falls in a little bit of a strange place, being after Blood on the Tracks and Desire, which were considered really big, successful comeback records for Dylan. And then there was this one. And then all of a sudden, the controversy of, the Christianity albums. And it's a real gem. I mean, that was the impression that hit me. It was like, this is kind of a forgotten gem in Dylan's catalog. It just kind of sits there quietly.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, it did well. It went gold, yeah, because it was Dylan, and he was still on a high from Blood on the Tracks and Desire. Right. So it sold well. I think the critics, they were mixed on it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the common refrains that I discovered, you know, reading more and more about Dylan is that, you know, I'm so used to musicians of his ilk, his status, being perfectionists and getting everything perfect, but he yeah. is not that person in the studio. And a common refrain is he still needs a producer after he releases an album. And there was a producer on this, but, you know, it was sort of a friend from Columbia Records. But then you get Daniel Lanois with Oh Mercy, who does right. a great job. And then you read about their relationship and how contentious it is. But
yeah.
they get the most out of him. And I know we have Oh Mercy already in the Hall of Fame, as it should be. But it's funny to me that he he just sort of throws ideas out there, and then when he tours, clearly he doesn't really tell the band how he's going to play or what he's going to play. They have to watch his hands the
Right.
entire time, which is just wild to me. So he's sort of this, you know, creative genius, but not a perfectionist. I don't really understand it when you think about it. So
that's a fascinating insight. And it's so true, you know. How can you be, you know, at that level to be able to write those songs, and then, unlike, you know, a Springsteen, right, who would labor for years and years to try to get it exactly right. Yeah.
I had a comment about the album title as well, Street Legal, which is interesting too, and also maybe goes into the changing of the guard, but the cover as well, he's going through this divorce. So now he's available, perhaps. He's street legal.
Interesting.
And you see him on the cover. You see him on the cover at the bottom of those steps. It's somewhere in Santa Monica, I think. And he's sort
Is
of
it?
dressed,
okay,
up like he's getting ready to hit the town. So watch out, ladies. You know, he's now street legal. So
that's beautiful. That's a great interpretation. And, you know, if you look on the inside too, on the sleeves, there's a picture of him in a restaurant or something, lighting a cigarette, you know, and sitting around. He could be at a bar or something. It's very interesting in that sense. And recorded in Santa Monica. There you go. So could have been, like you said, that famous photograph on the front. Very recognizable album. But, you know, it's interesting. Like you said, it's one of those ones, if you're flipping through all the Dylan albums at the store, you're just like, oh, Street Legal, yeah, I don't know, I never heard it.
I think that's how it worked. I mean, I was clearly at the, you know, getting all the Dylan albums at the time,
yeah,
and then keeping up as they were released. And I still have them. So, you know, I don't talk about him much wherever on the podcast or wherever, but, you know, Dylan is probably my number one as far as all time greats are concerned. Keeping up with that, I want to put out a request and shout out to Marios Critiotis, who is a huge, huge Dylan person, and I need him on the show to put a album into the Hall of Fame. So I'm talking to you now, Marios, and we expect to hear from you, sir.
That's right. I second that emotion, Marios. So let's make it happen from Pittsburgh. All right, that'd be great. Anything else, Harris, that you want to add before we close out our little induction ceremony here?
No, I mean, we talked about two songs that are my two favorite on the album.
Okay.
But like I said, the whole album is great. No Time to Think, Baby Stop Crying, Is Your Love in Vain? You know, give it a listen. It's 45 minutes long, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I hope the listeners will check it out and, you know, let us know what they think as well. And I'm sure there's some big fans of it anyway out there who might want to add to it. So it's fun. I don't know. When you put out a call for this, for some reason, this was the first one I wanted to put into the Hall of Fame. It's clearly not my favorite Dylan album. You know, I have other ones, whether it's Blood on the Tracks, whether it's Blonde on Blonde, or, you know, whatever. But for some reason, I think I just wanted people to give this one some thought, because it is overlooked, like you say.
Love that. Absolutely love that. And that's merit in itself. And I think that's what I really like about this little Dylan Hall of Fame project, is that there are so many albums like this that can be considered, you know, in his career that are worthy of that. So that's fantastic. All right. Well, thank you, Harris, very much. I think we know what song we're going to play out with. We talked about it at the beginning, so we'll definitely go out with that one. As Harris said, second that emotion, if anybody else, you know, has something that's unique or interesting about the Dylan catalog, or you have a personal connection to it, we'd love to have you put that album in the Hall of Fame. So, Harris, I want to thank you very, very much for stepping up and putting this in, and your wonderful insights. So thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Patrick.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We're going to have Dylan Hall of Fame inductions all week long on the podcast. We're just getting started, and Harris has kicked us off wonderfully. And with that, on behalf of Jim and on behalf of Harris, I want to thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you guys.
Senor, let's overturn these tables, disconnect.
He's now street legal.